bested him. "He must sleep," Galleon said. "It's not good for him to be this anxious."
"Rest, darling," Meta said, stroking his arm again. "You'll feel better in a day or two."
"More like three," Galleon said. "Barely in time, too."
"Why?" Maddox whispered. "Why is it barely in time?"
Meta gave the hollow image a questioning glance.
"He's recovering," Galleon said. "The danger of laser shock is over. Rest is the best medicine now."
Maddox tried to resist. It was as if the AI had power over his eyelids. He fought it, but he had no strength. Increment by increment, his eyelids closed until he was asleep once more. Maddox shuddered and his eyes flew open. This time Riker sat in the chair. The sergeant played a video game on a tablet. Was that really Riker, though? Maybe it was another android. With care, Maddox drew up his knees. Maybe the android heard the fabric move. Riker looked up.
"Captain,"
Riker said. The sergeant set aside the tablet, standing. He put his hands on the bed's rail.
"How are you feeling, sir?"
Maddox inspected the Riker android.
"Galleon said you shouldn't be feeling any more pain,"
Riker said. Maddox sneered. Riker stepped back. The sergeant appeared thoughtful.
"You went into laser shock, sir."
"Did I?"
Maddox asked.
"Galleon prescribed medicine."
"Ah,"
Maddox said.
"The AI said he's been studying human bodily systems. We had to do something, sir."
"I know," Maddox said. "So let's forgo the pretense."
"Know what, sir?"
Riker asked, appearing confused. The creature did it well.
"You're an android, of course," Maddox said.
"Do you mean my arm, sir?"
"You know exactly what I mean."
Riker frowned until understanding lit his eyes.
"The Dana android, the detonation, right. You must think she controlled Galleon."
"It's obvious. She had to," Maddox said. "She was alone in the AI core chamber."
"I don't dispute that, sir, and you're partly correct. The doctor, well, her android double, did attempt to suborn the AI. None of us counted on driving force Galleon's cunning, sir. The AI has been busy these past months in Earth orbit. Galleon explained it to us."
Maddox watched the lying android. He had to kill them all and regain control of the starship. At that point, the hollow image appeared. Galleon approached the bed, peering into the captain's eyes.
"You are finally lucid," Galleon said.
"He thinks you're a pawn of the android makers," Riker told the hollow image. "He believes I'm an android."
Galleon froze as his eyelids fluttered. That lasted 2 seconds.
"I see," the AI said. "It makes sense from a hypersensitive mind, a possible conclusion given his limited evidence. Captain Maddox, I tricked the Dana android."
"How?" Maddox demanded.
"Do you remember I spoke about redundancy limiting my core power by 7%?
Maddox managed to nod yes.
"Before that," Galleon said, "I added an earlier redundancy. It worked on the problem while the majority of my computing systems aided the android. That's why we were in the wrong spot in the Tau Ceti system for the missile attack."
"That doesn't make sense," Maddox said.
"It would to an ad hoc," Galleon said. "My true identity remained hidden in the redundancy. It observed the android's actions, along with the missile assault, and waited for the proper moment to resurface."
"Who made the portal missile attack?" Maddox asked.
"The exact personages remain hidden," Galleon said. "However, they are directly linked to the Builder AI box and the androids. By using the plural, I am referring to the Dana android and those dispatched by the submersible to help you escape the Greenland complex."
"That means the Ludendorff hollow image was in league with the android makers," Maddox said.
"I rate that the highest probability," Galleon said.
"It means we're likely heading into a trap."
"I concur with your reasoning." Maddox frowned. It caused a thumping rhythm to beat in his forehead directly over his eyes. It hadn't become all-encompassing yet, but it might get there soon.
Was there really a mathematical question in the enemy beam?
Maddox asked.
Affirmative,
Galleon said.
When I came running to the AI core, the Dana android was tampering with you.
Correct, Galleon said.
Without my hidden redundancy, it would have gained control of me and likely the starship.
What was its directive to you?
To follow her instructions and remain silent concerning the takeover.
The thumping in Maddox's mind had gotten worse. It made the edges of his vision black.
What happened to me?
Maddox asked.
Why am I so weak?
Laser shock, Galleon said.
Surely you've heard of it.
Maddox had. Sometimes those beamed with a laser went into shock, showing all the symptoms he had.
Fortunately, Galleon said, you have a robust physique. In another day, you will be up. In a week, you should be as good as ever.
How far away from the Xerxes system?
Half a day from the final jump point,
Galleon said. Maddox had been striving to sit up. He now relaxed, letting himself sink into the pillow and mattress. If they were near the Xerxes system, he must have been out for almost 2 weeks or more.
You don't mean laser shock, the captain said, but laser poisoning.
You took it hard, sir, Riker said with worry in his voice.
So it would seem,
Maddox said. He stared up at the ceiling. If he'd been out that long, anything could have happened aboard the starship. Why would Galleon pretend to be okay if he wasn't? What would they hope to achieve by fooling just him? Or could Galleon have done exactly what he'd suggested? This redundancy.
It sounded crazy enough to be an ad hoc thing.
It didn't strike Maddox as something plausible an android would make up to fool the hybrid.
I'd like to speak to Lieutenant Noonan,
Maddox said.
I shall summon her, Galleon said. I want to speak to her alone,
Maddox added.
Sir,
Galleon said,
time is critical.
You will do as I order, Galleon, Maddox said.
The AI turned to Riker. The sergeant nodded.
Very well,
Galleon said.
You wanted to see me, sir?
Valerie asked as she entered the chamber. Maddox was sitting up, reading a tablet. He hadn't heard the lieutenant enter. That troubled him. The laser poisoning seemed to have dulled his senses. He hoped that wasn't a permanent situation. The lieutenant stood at attention before him.
Please sit,
Maddox said. Dutifully, Valerie sat down. Maddox laid the tablet on his blanket-covered lap.
It would appear that we and Star Watch have no idea what really goes on down at the dome in the Mid-Atlantic. I've argued for turning around and going home, sir. We have to warn High Command about this. Who knows how many people, how many androids have taken the place of real people?
Maddox had reached the same conclusion.
I believe the Builder AI box and the Esquire Noble androids all came from the Mid-Atlantic Dome. Given the elaborate security around Earth, that makes better sense than the box or androids having arrived by spaceship,
Valerie said.
There's just one thing. That implies the pyramid down there is another nexus. Do you think that's possible?
Maddox shook his head ruefully.
We have no idea what's really down there.
Maybe the Dana android kept as close to the truth as possible, unaware how much any of us already knew. In fact, I suspect that's the most likely conclusion.
Do you think Dana is still alive somewhere?
It surprised Maddox he hadn't thought about Dr. Rich yet. If she was still alive,
Dana must be down in the dome, he said.
Valerie shivered.
Do you think the new men are behind this, sir?
That's an interesting question. When did this pyramid become operational? We don't really know. One clue may be Dr. Oren's death a year ago. That's likely when the pyramid became operational. The man must have been legitimate.
If what the android told us is the truth, Valerie said,
it will be our working assumption. Valerie nodded, and she seemed to hesitate, finally saying, "Can I ask you a question, sir?"
"By all means," Maddox said.
"Why did you ask to talk to me alone?"
Maddox smiled.
"You are my foil, Lieutenant. You have a tendency to speak your mind."
He didn't add that he believed Valerie would be the hardest among the crew for the androids to duplicate in such a way that he wouldn't notice. What did that say about Meta and him that he knew Valerie better?
"And?"
she asked.
"I want truth in hard doses," Maddox said. "I've been floundering too much lately. I have the feeling someone is trying to maneuver me, and I have no idea who or why. I mean to find out."
"Yes, sir,"
Valerie said with enthusiasm.
Maddox nodded inwardly. He finally believed the others. This was the real Valerie Noonan, and she wanted to help him defeat Star Watch's enemies.
The captain was surprised how good he felt, knowing he was still among friends. It made him determined to rescue the doctor if she was still alive.
"I'd be surprised if the new men were behind this one," Maddox said. "They sent the destroyer against Earth. Why would they do that if they had this Trojan horse in our midst?
It could be Strand, though."
"Or?"
Valerie asked.
"Or it could be Ludendorff,"
Maddox said.
Valerie lurched out of the chair. "Why do you suspect the professor?"
"One reason is because of the Ludendorff and Dana androids," Maddox said.
"But I don't understand why Ludendorff would act against Star Watch."
"He's old, Lieutenant. How old, we don't know, except he's likely as old as Strand is. Does such great age change one's thinking process? I would suspect so. What does Ludendorff really desire? He's been as tricky as Strand. Given the professor's cunning, I continue to wonder why he went into the drone base when we were chasing the destroyer. Did he do so in order to pull a switch on us, or did something surprise him down there and force the switch?"
Valerie sat down, maybe considering the idea. She began to fidget in the growing silence. Finally, she said, "I have the horrible feeling we're missing something right before us. What if the greatest danger to Star Watch is the pyramid on Earth? Maybe whoever is behind the androids wants victory far away from the solar system."
"So they can do what?"
"Exactly what we've seen. Replace important people with androids. You said before that capturing the governing AI would be just as good as capturing victory. Wouldn't the same hold true with Star Watch High Command?"
"That's a profound insight," Maddox said. For the first time, he truly considered turning around and rushing back to Earth. If they hadn't been just one jump from the Xerxes system, he might have ordered it.
"No," he said. "Let's see if Ludendorff is really locked in the Nexus. It shouldn't take more than a day or two. Afterward, we'll race back to Earth faster than we came."
"Yes, sir,"
Valerie said.
Maddox sighed. He felt tired. It was galling. "I'm going to sleep a bit. Then I'll get up."
He nodded.
"And then we'll make the last jump. It's time we figured out what's really going on."
Chapter 24. Through a long, circuitous, stellar route, guided by messages from Strand when it was safe to use a Lommer point and when it was not, Pa Kerr and his hammer ship had finally swung behind the entire Grand Fleet. They entered the new Venezuela system, exiting the Lommer point linked by several jumps to Korea 323. Pa Kerr stirred first on the bridge, the least affected by jump lag. He sat to the side at a sensor console. It was several minutes before the sensors started working. He scanned the star system, particularly near New Venezuela 3. Ah, he was in luck. 3 Star Watch destroyers orbited the Earth-like planet, along with a Chin super junk and a Windsor League hammer ship. That was interesting. It looked as if Admiral Fletcher was attempting to integrate the Grand Fleet. Strand had predicted that would happen after the incident in the Inferno system and Commodore Garcia's death.
The submen were becoming scared. They listened more intently now to the one subman who had bested a new men fleet. He'd done so in the Tanish system 2 years ago with Starship Victory's help. Did Fletcher think his integration would save the Grand Fleet from annihilation? According to Strand, the Grand Fleet had bunched up once again, and this time it would stay bunched up, possibly until its end. That had allowed Strand to guide Pa Kerr around to New Venezuela. The enemy still had several brave patrol officers willing to scout on their own. The rest of the ships moved with the Grand Fleet, hoping their size would save them from the clever new men. It actually might do so, except that Strand had a surprise for them once the Grand Fleet entered the wrong star system. First, in order to frighten them even more and cause their herd-like instincts to harden, they needed this last example. Pa Kerr turned in his chair, hearing the others begin to stir. Soon, messages would reach the hammer ship as the submen in orbit around New Venezuela 3 would detect them and send queries.
"Captain,"
a subwoman said, wearing the uniform of His Majesty's Windsor League service. She was one of five surviving crew members from Palaine's water moon, saved for this very reason. Pa Kerr had spent countless hours hypnotizing the Windsor League officers. All five were on the bridge at their normal stations. Only Pa Kerr and the warfare specialist were with them. Their hammer ship, renamed as the Resolute, accelerated toward the submen in orbit around New Venezuela 3. The subman playing captain for Pa Kerr raised his head. The man had glazed eyes and slack features.
"Captain," a woman said, "I'm receiving signals from the Golden Hind."
It was a hammer ship.
"They want us to identify ourselves."
The pretend captain peered at Pa Kerr. The new man nodded slightly. The slack skin tightened on the captain's face. His eyes shined, and he spoke confidently.
"Put them on the main screen," he said.
Soon an enemy subman appeared on the screen. He wore a Windsor League uniform, the symbols showing him to be a commander. He asked the usual questions. The shiny-eyed captain said this was the Resolute. "His Majesty has decided on sending early reinforcements," the hypnotized subman said. "There are four more hammer ships on their way. How goes the counteroffensive, Commander?" Time passed as the questions and answers traveled back and forth. The time lag made it a painful, drawn-out process. Finally, almost an hour later, the subman commander in orbit around New Venezuela 3 welcomed them to the Grand Fleet. The hours grew as the Resolute headed in system. New questions came and were answered more quickly as the time lag between ships was constantly shortened. After half a day of this, the hypnotized captain began to show signs of strain. Pa Kerr realized the subman's former personality was trying to reassert itself. It was time for some comm problems. He signaled the comm officer, the woman. She leaned toward the comm.
"Come in, Golden Hind. I say, again, come in, please."
She glanced at Pa Kerr. He chopped his hand through the air. The comm officer promptly clicked off the comm.
"Why did you do that?" the subman captain asked her.
"Attend me,"
Pa Kerr said sharply. The five subhumans stopped their various activities, looking up, turning toward him robotically.
"Captain,"
Pa Kerr said. The subman sitting in the command chair did not respond properly. Instead, he hunched his head.
"Captain."
The subman hunched more. Pa Kerr hesitated trying again. Three failures in a row might begin a new conditioning. Captain's hind brain might be able to lever free using that.
"Look into my eyes, Captain,"
Pa Kerr said. The subman fought the compulsion. He scowled and squirmed in his chair. Finally, he gripped the armrests until his fingertips turned white, ever so slowly, however. His neck muscles forced his head upward. His eyes jerked up and down like the frisky colts the new men kept on the throne world. Against the man's will, his gaze locked on Pa Kerr's black eyes. The new man began to speak to him quietly, gently.
"No!" the subman screamed. "No, you're devils! You're using me!"
He twisted around on the chair.
Wake up, people! Can't you see?
The subman gurgled, his eyes widened in shock and in pain. Deftly, Pa Kerr removed the force blade from the man's back and stepped to one side. The man gasped once more as the smell of charred flesh wafted through the bridge.
Emergency, Pa Kerr shouted. Flee the bridge. We're having an electrical fire.
The four remaining subhumans glanced at each other.
Hurry,
Pa Kerr told them.
The captain died trying to save you. Run to safety before it's too late, or he'll have died in vain.
They got up, hurrying to the exit. The chief engineer turned around, staring at the dead subman on the floor. Pa Kerr marked that subman for death. He did not want another problem like the imitation captain. After the Windsor League captives had departed the bridge, Pa Kerr turned to the warfare specialist.
Clean him up. Wipe away the blood. I'll have to modify the others.
The specialist nodded. Pa Kerr closed his eyes a moment. He had a few difficult hours ahead. The comm officer should prove the most malleable. They had to get in close for this attack, and it had to be a complete surprise. He opened his eyes and headed for the exit. The Resolute began to break. The former comm officer now sat in the captain's chair. The engineer was missing from his station. Like the former captain, he was dead, already processed through the ship's incinerator. One of the Star Watch destroyers left through a Lommer point. It was going to bring the good news to the main concentration of warships that reinforcements were already here. The Golden Hind was beginning to slow its orbital path around New Venezuela 3. It was going to match velocities with the approaching Resolute. All the while, new messages from His Majesty's hammer ship became more insistent.
You may proceed, Pa Kerr said.
The new captain pressed a button on her armrest. The planet, hammer ship, and super junk coming into view around New Venezuela 3 disappeared from the main screen. The Golden Hind's commander appeared there now, a small, bearded man.
You fixed your comm problem? The Windsor League commander asked.
Yes,
the subwoman comm officer said, smiling.
Where's the captain?
The comm officer hesitated, opening her mouth but saying nothing.
Is something wrong?
The Golden Hind's commander asked. The comm officer glanced at Pa Kerr.
The captain is sick,
he said softly. The subwoman licked her lips, facing the main screen.
The captain fell sick, she said. We had trouble on the bridge.
Pa Kerr stiffened. What was wrong with the subwoman? She wasn't supposed to say those things.
What kind of trouble?
The Windsor League commander asked.
Electrical, she said. It was a power outage. The captain ran to repair it and was electrocuted.
What? The commander asked.
It fried him,
the subwoman said in a robotic voice, with her eyes wide and staring.
It was horrible.
The Golden Hind's commander stared at her in shock and disbelief. Pa Kerr made a swift calculation and decision. He turned to his board and tapped fast. The Resolute quit braking and began accelerating instead. He motioned the warfare specialist, who immediately brought the shields online and warmed up the railguns. New Venezuela 3 was still too far out for effective fire under normal circumstances, but with their special rounds, it was time to attack.
I'm not sure I understand this, the Golden Hind's commander said. You've raised your shields. Is there a reason for this?
Fire,
Pa Kerr told the warfare specialist.
Aim the first volley at the Golden Hind. Aim the next at the super junk.
The comm officer stared at the screen.
Tell him we're having mechanical trouble,
Pa Kerr ordered the subwoman. The comm officer turned to stare at him.
Captain,
the Golden Hind's commander said.
What is the meaning of this? Who is giving you orders?
Pa Kerr cut the connection and concentrated on his board.
What is wrong with me?
The subwoman asked, rubbing between her eyes. Pa Kerr took time from his tapping to draw his blaster. He set it on needle fire and beamed the remaining subhumans. They each toppled onto the deck dead. They were no longer useful, and he didn't have time to escort them to the brig. He had a battle to fight, and he'd lost the all-important element of surprise. The hammer ship, super junk, and destroyers were accelerating out of orbit from New Venezuela 3. They were still deep in the gravity well. They'd had two choices, and they'd made them fast. Each had decided to come up out of the gravity well to fight instead of trying to race around the other side of the planet to hide. The Resolute bored in, heading into the gravity well. Pa Kerr had already played his chief card, the initial shots launched from the hammer ship's railguns some time ago. There were Nova bombs, although without any cloaking. Otherwise, they were the same weapons that had annihilated the majority of Commodore Garcia's flotilla. The Golden Hind's railguns chugged auto-fire, sending solid rounds at the approaching Nova bombs. It was next to impossible to hit those until the bombs were only 5,000 kilometers away or so. By then, because of the bomb's massive damage radius, it would hardly matter. The submen couldn't possibly possess that good of targeting computers to hit farther out. Then a Nova bomb ignited 15,000 kilometers from the Golden Hind. An enemy auto round must have been on target, setting off the Nova bomb's proximity switch. The Nova blast must have damaged the enemy, but Pa Kerr had no way of knowing yet. Although the Resolute was much farther away, the blast overloaded his hammer ship's sensors, whitening the main screen.
"I need sensors," Pa Kerr said.
The warfare specialist took the sensors offline, saving them from another Nova blast. They had lost the use of the superior sensors, as Strand had taken them back after the incident in the Inferno system. The minutes passed. The other Nova bombs should have already ignited. The specialist brought the sensors back online, removing their outer combat coverings. Some of the former whiteness had dissipated. The bridge door opened and the comm specialist ran into the chamber, sliding into his spot at the comm. His fingers blurred across his board.
"The Golden Hind's triple shields are down," the comm specialist said. "The hull armor is breached. They're losing water and oxygen. Fifth rank," he said. "They're firing railguns."
Pa Kerr listened to the data in silence. How had the subwoman broken through her conditioning? She had ruined a perfect surprise.
"I'm retargeting the Golden Hind," the warfare specialist said.
Pa Kerr focused on the main screen. With New Venezuela 3 behind it, the Golden Hind trained its railguns on the nearing Resolute, firing thermonuclear rounds. Air and water boiled out of gaping wounds in the crippled hammer ship's hull. The giant craft shuddered. A piece of hull armor ripped loose, spinning away. The superjunk was nearer. Its shield was dark, and it held on to its fighters. Maybe its commander realized the strike fighters would never survive the coming nuclear holocaust.
"Can Strand help us?" the warfare specialist asked.
Pa Kerr's shoulders twitched. The Methuselah man would help them only if that helped himself. For all he knew, Strand had already left the star system.
"Send another salvo at each," Pa Kerr said. "Then shut down the sensors."
The two new men tapped at their consoles. Pa Kerr's stomach clenched. Thermonuclear rounds approached. He had to save their now brittle sensors. If they were blind, the enemy could annihilate them at their leisure. Pa Kerr would then cease to exist. He did not like how that made him feel. After several minutes passed, he said,
"Turn on the sensors."
They came online again, but only partially worked.
"Enemy nuclear blasts have reached our two outer shields," the warfare specialist announced. "The third shield is dark. We must finish this, Commander."
Pa Kerr signaled with his hand. The hammer ship's mighty railguns chugged round after round at the reeling Golden Hind. Meanwhile, the superjunk began to launch fighters.
"Impressive," the warfare specialist said. "They're launching into a radioactive mess. None of those pilots are going to survive the fight."
"The strike fighters are suiciding against us," Pa Kerr said. "They could prove dangerous."
The normal procedure for a carrier or a superjunk was to stay back and launch fighters and bombers. The mothership was precious. This time, the superjunk continued to accelerate at Resolute as it launched craft the entire time.
"Commander," the warfare specialist said, "we have a situation. All the submen and their various craft are boring in against us."
Pa Kerr could see that for himself. He had an elbow on an armrest and rested his chin on a fist. What did this mean? Strand's actions were to have demoralized the submen. Those attacking did not seem demoralized in the least.
"They have reckless courage," Pa Kerr said.
I'm targeting the superjunk, the warfare specialist said.
Pa Kerr nodded absently.
The destroyers are coming up behind the junk, the warfare specialist said. It's as if they're using the bigger ship as a shield.
Is desperate courage a symptom that occurs before cowardice strikes deep?
Pa Kerr asked. Commander, the warfare specialist said, what are your orders?
Pa Kerr frowned. Destroy them, of course. Destroy them all.
No matter what happened, he must survive. The hammer ship continued to send railgun rounds at the superjunk. The Resolute's auto-defense cannons chugged away at the closing strike fighters. The junk had defensive lasers, beaming as many nuclear warheads as they could before they ignited. The Resolute sent too many rounds, however, swamping the junk's defenses. Thermonuclear blasts hammered the junk's shield. It went from red to brown to total collapse. The next nuclear blast tore away armor plating. Then, the huge carrier shuddered for a long moment and exploded. The monstrous blast blew heat and debris in a growing circumference. One of the destroyers zoomed from the destruction. The other never appeared. The blasts from the superjunk must have annihilated it. Three of the Golden Hind's last thermonuclear rounds blew down Resolute's last shield. That allowed a cloud of strike fighters to fire their guns and launch missiles and space marine pods directly at the hull armor. The Star Watch destroyer added its laser beams. They were not heavy battleship beams or even cruiser beams, but they did help. Without a shield to breach, the lasers began to burn into the hammer ship's armor.
Sir, the comm specialist said, I have discovered a problem.
The junk and hammer ship are gone, Pa Kerr said. We're out of danger.
No, Commander. There is a danger.
The bulkheads shuddered around them on the bridge as a massive blast shook the hammer ship.
What was that?
Pa Kerr asked.
Antimatter warheads, Commander, the comm specialist said. It is a new weapon.
Marine pods are landing on the outer skin, the warfare specialist said.
How many Marines?
Pa Kerr asked.
The first wave, almost 100, the warfare specialist said. Another 500 are on the way.
We can defeat 600 space marines boarding us in waves,
Pa Kerr said.
True, the warfare specialist said, but we cannot defeat them and fight the strike fighters at the same time.
Another destroyer appeared, adding its lasers and firing more antimatter missiles at them.
This should not be happening,
Pa Kerr said.
What are your orders, Commander? The warfare specialist said.
We fight,
Pa Kerr said. And fight they did, trading shots with the destroyers and clouds of strike fighters. The Resolute took out 80% of the enemy. While the hammer ship did so, hundreds of submen space marines entered the captured Windsor League vessel. The marines did not attempt to take control. Instead, as they fought their way deeper into the ship, battling new men, they planted demolition devices. Those began to explode, crippling the mighty warship further.
Sir, the warfare specialist said, the submen have behaved in a suicidal fashion throughout. It appears they are willing to die as long as they can kill some of us.
I have concluded the same thing,
Pa Kerr said.
While we have annihilated almost all of their ships, enough strike fighters remain to finish our hammer ship. What now, sir?
Pa Kerr stared the warfare specialist in the eyes.
It is wasteful to throw away our lives.
That is so.
Come,
Pa Kerr told the other two.
We will abandon ship.
What shall I tell my brothers battling the space marines?
The warfare specialist asked.
Tell them nothing.
Pa Kerr said,
as they are doing their duty. We must escape in order to inform Strand of this new enemy tactic.
Escape how, Commander?
The warfare specialist asked.
By using our single ships,
Pa Kerr said, heading for the exit.
Where will you go, sir? The planet is no refuge.
Where will we go?
Pa Kerr corrected. The warfare specialist shook his head.
I will remain at my post, Commander, fighting until death claims me. I will not let the submen outperform me in battle.
Pa Kerr glanced at the comm specialist.
I too shall remain at my post, the new man said. I will kill the enemy. Long live the throne world.
Pa Kerr gave the formal salute. Then he hurried out the exit. He couldn't understand what was wrong with those two. They had a chance to live. Maybe it was his prolonged study of the submen that allowed him his greater perception. Glorious death in battle was one thing. Living to fight again and winning in the end was another. He had to take his information to Strand. First, he had to survive and reach the single ships.
Chapter 25.
Easing near an open hatch to the hangar bay, Pa Kerr peered through it. He wore a space suit because he hadn't been able to reach a stealth suit. Chin Space Marines had been in his way to the armory. He'd been forced to detour around them. The way seemed clear into the hangar bay. Pa Kerr propelled himself into the vast chamber. The dampeners no longer worked here. Thus, he floated toward the remaining single ships. The outer bay door had been blown open. The stars shined outside, along with a corner of New Venezuela 3. Pa Kerr forced down thoughts of radiation poisoning. He would deal with that later when the time came. He could not believe how the situation had so dramatically changed against him. It was the subwoman's fault. Her mind had been too dull to properly hold on to its conditioning. That wouldn't have happened if she'd had more wit. Instead of sneaking through his own ship, he would now be reporting to Strand about a job completed. Thinking about the subwoman's failure almost enraged Pa Kerr. He was too superior to let such an emotion grip him at an important moment like this, though. He must survive. It was imperative to the war effort. He served the throne world best by surviving, not by throwing away his life in a futile gesture as the others of his sept did. Perhaps that was why he was fifth rank and they so much lower. A superior being saw his utility to the universe and worked hard to preserve it for future use. A space marine pod shot through the bay door. Pa Kerr's lips drew back in a snarl. He raised his blaster, aiming for a fuel tank, and fired an intense beam. Grabbing a stanchion, he yanked himself down behind a shuttle. An instant later, the pod crashed against the rear bulkhead. An explosion rained metal, heat, and tumbling space marines. The shuttle Pa Kerr hid behind moved, knocking him backward. He tumbled across the floor, holding himself limply to prevent self-injury. Pa Kerr hit an object and caromed upward. He blinked, trying to keep conscious. Several space marines moved where they had landed. He clicked the blaster's setting, narrowing the aperture. Then he aimed at each struggling marine, breaching helmet after helmet. At the last moment, he looked back to see where he sailed. Terror squeezed his stomach. He released the blaster and reached as far as he could. Barely, he grabbed the edge of the outer hangar bay door, catching himself before tumbling out of the hammer ship and into space and oblivion. Pa Kerr yanked himself as hard as he could, hurling himself toward a single ship. He caught his spinning blaster just in time. A space marine saw him firing gyroc rounds. Pa Kerr beamed the three accelerating cones before they could hit him. Then he beamed the marine in the faceplate, killing the subman. By that time, he neared the single ship. First holstering the blaster, he grabbed the stern of the single ship. The momentum hurt his fingers and almost tore the gloves free of the metal. But he was a new man, possessing superior strength. By degrees, he worked his way to the front of the single ship. This one lacked a canopy. Maybe they all did. That wasn't going to matter now. In less than a minute, Pa Kerr strapped himself in. He pressed a switch, charging the engine so it thrummed with power. A last check showed him that none of the space marines lived. He manipulated the controls, lifting from the deck, turning the craft, and heading toward the open bay door. He was going to have a fighting chance at survival. For the first time in his life, Pa Kerr almost smiled. Pa Kerr built up velocity, fleeing from the stricken hammer ship. He didn't have much time left. The warfare specialist was getting ready to self-destruct, taking the space marines, decelerating destroyer, and landing strike fighters with him. Within his bubble helmet, Pa Kerr stared intently at his controls. A warning bleep alerted him. He looked up from where he lay. Through the windshield, he saw a strike fighter's exhaust, the craft headed straight at him. The unit beeped again and then blinked red. The strike fighter had radar lock on. Another bright streak showed outside. It was the first launching missile. A second one meant the pilot wanted a certain kill. Pa Kerr's gloved fingers typed madly over the single ship's controls. He had seconds left. The missiles streaked straight at him. The strike fighter pilot began firing exploding bullets at his craft.
No, Pa Kerr said.
The procedure wasn't quite ready, but he stabbed the fold switch. The engine knocked, the missile ignited, and then everything disappeared from his sight. Pa Kerr woke to another warning beep. Groggily, he opened his eyes. He still lay in his single ship. Red lights flashed everywhere on it, indicating many problems. The warning beeps in his helmet were the most important. He was almost out of air. How long had he been unconscious? No. The better question was, did he have more oxygen containers? His present one was almost out of air. He unbuckled and twisted around. The helmet beeps made it difficult to search, so he turned off the warning. There were no new air containers in the single ship. He was doomed. Pa Kerr looked around. He saw New Venezuela 3, but none of the warships or strike fighters. He had no idea if they survived or had all blown up. A small part of him sneered at his dilemma. He had been the hammer ship's commander. He should have gone down with it, fighting to the end. Wasn't his data more important than such a futile gesture, though? Did it matter now? As Pa Kerr thought of these things, the last of his air dissipated. At the very end, he believed he saw a star cruiser appear nearby. Death must be certain, as he had already begun to hallucinate. By slow degrees, Pa Kerr came to, in a white room. He didn't understand it at first.
Am I alive or dead?
He shuddered at a horrifying idea. Maybe the submen were right about an afterlife. No new man subscribed to the ancient cult. He discovered the concept through studying subhuman psychology. Heaven and hell were primitive beliefs. Thus, they could not possibly be true. What if it turned out to be true? Did that mean he was destined for hell? A frown touched his features. He inhaled through his nostrils. The sterile environment caused Pa Kerr to change his assessment. This was a hospital chamber. That would logically mean he had survived running out of oxygen. That in turn meant the star cruiser had really been there. Of course, this was the Methuselah man's ship. It would seem natural that Pa Kerr would have been elated with this revelation. Instead, he knew despair. He had failed to annihilate the enemy vessels while retaining his own. Strand had further uses for the Resolute. Now the captured hammer ship was gone. With a groan, Pa Kerr sat up. He wore a silver suit without any insignia. Something felt wrong, but he couldn't place it. He studied the white environment. It was seamless. The wrongness didn't come from there. No, it was a cool sensation. It came from his scalp. Pa Kerr felt his head. He was bald. Someone had shaven his hair. A sinking feeling hit him then. There were hairline scars across his scalp. Who had cut him, and why? Gingerly, Pa Kerr slid off the cot, standing unsteadily on his feet. A hatch slid up. A new man walked into the chamber, setting a chair on the floor.
"Excuse me," Pa Kerr said.
The new man ignored him, exiting the chamber so the hatch slid shut. Pa Kerr blinked at the chair. Was that for him? He pushed off the cot and began to stagger for it. The hatch slid up again. Pa Kerr halted, looking up as he swayed where he stood. An old man wearing an earth suit walked into the chamber. He had wrinkled hands, and his large head seemed too heavy for his frame. The facial skin looked waxy, as if it belonged to a mannequin. The blue eyes burned with power, though.
"Get away from my chair,"
the old man said. It surprised Pa Kerr that he lurched backward, almost falling as he hurried to comply with the order. The old man moved briskly, coming to the chair, plopping into it. Pa Kerr realized he knew the man. It was Strand. He wanted to ask what the Methuselah man had done to him. Instead, he waited patiently, respectfully. Strand settled himself, stretching his lips in an ugly smile.
"How do you feel?"
Pa Kerr blinked several times.
"I'm tired." "That's to be expected."
"And I'm concerned."
"Indeed," Strand said. "What concerns you?"
Pa Kerr touched his head.
"These scars indicate a surgical procedure." "Correct," Strand said. "The doctor used a scalpel and then a saw."
"Are you suggesting the doctor removed part of my skull?"
"Exactly," Strand said. "I do not allow anyone on my ship without first going under the knife. It makes everything much simpler that way, preserving my sense of ease."
Pa Kerr rubbed his skull again. The Methuselah man's words implied the doctor had done something to his brain to modify him.
"It's beginning to sink in, I see,"
Strand said. "Did you implant a control unit in me?"
"I call it an obedience chip," Strand said. "Don't you think that's more accurate?"
Pa Kerr shuddered. This was inconceivable. A horror loosened his lips.
"Do you distrust us to such a degree?" "You're right, of course," Strand said. "Distrust lies at the root of my longevity. It's why others perished. They let their guard down once too many times. I never let my guard down. Thus, I will be the last one to die."
Pa Kerr thought about that.
"May I ask why you saved me?" "Oh, it's because I like you," Strand said. "And because you're different, quite different from the others. It must be why you fled your hammer ship and they remained at their posts."
Pa Kerr kept his features emotionless, blank.
"I did not flee." "No?"
Strand asked, with humor in his voice.
"I came bearing data I believed you needed." "Oh, well, a noble new man," Strand said. "One who thinks about others before his own precious hide. That is a vast improvement." "You are mocking me." "Quite right," Strand said. "I detest liars and fools. Those who lie to themselves are the biggest fools of all. Don't you realize why you fled the hammer ship?"
"To bring you valuable data," Pa Kerr said.
"I already told you that's a lie."
"No," Pa Kerr said. Strand laughed in an ugly manner.
"Is it so wrong to desire to live?"
"You desire to live," Pa Kerr said.
"That's it. Throw it back in my teeth. See how well that does aboard my star cruiser with an obedience chip in your brain. I could make you strangle yourself. That's always a hoot to watch."
"Do you seek to lie to yourself?"
Pa Kerr said, refusing to truckle in fear. The old man seemed to freeze in his chair. Only the eyes moved, and they burned with menace.
"Well, well, well, the coward has teeth, does he? Maybe I can use you after all, a proud man who loves his skin above all else, is one I can trust to the fullest. It lets me know your motivation."
"You are attempting to demoralize me."
"No, I'm teaching you the true nature of yourself. You're a new man. Thus, you think you're the prize of life. You think there's nothing better under the sun than one of your kind. Well, you're wrong. I'm the best. What do you think of that?"
"You're too old and slow to be the best."
Strand laughed, nodding.
"I do not think you would have escaped the hammer ship as I did,"
Pa Kerr said.
"Yes, you're a prize, Parker, a genuine rarity among new men. Even better, you can blend in with the others. As long as the situation isn't too perilous, you're going to be a positive addition to my crew."
Parker felt a wave of weakness come over him. He rubbed the scars on his head and leaned against the cot. He frowned, thinking, and finally studied Strand.
"I have a drug in my system,"
Pa Kerr announced.
"Quite true,"
Strand said.
"It has made me talkative."
"That's right.
I have spoken my mind too freely."
"Not too freely,"
Strand said,
"but honestly. It lets me know that you still think you're special. You are, but not in the manner that you believe. Don't fret over it. You have a lot to learn. Now, quickly, what data did you wish to give me?"
Parker tried to keep silent.
"Speak,"
Strand said, as if talking to a parrot. Parker told him about the submen's suicidal fury, explaining how it was wrong at this point in their demoralization process. Strand pinched his lower lip.
"That is interesting. I think you do have a handle on—"
The Methuselah man smiled.
"On the submen's psychology."
"They should not have attacked with such fury."
"You're right," Strand said. "This will take some thought. I'd hoped to use the hammer ship again, but no matter, it's gone. I suppose this means I'll have to drop a few hellburners onto New Venezuela 3.
Parker cocked his head.
"I do not think any submen were on the planet."
"You're wrong. There's around 1,000, but that isn't the only reason I'll use the hellburners."
"Why else, then?"
Strand studied Parker. He did not care for the Methuselah man's vile smirk.
"I'll do it, because it will make Fletcher wonder why I did it,"
Strand said.
"That will drive him crazy, as he won't be able to come up with a reason."
"I can't think of a reason either."
"And that is the reason,"
Strand said.
"It's called sowing confusion. I'm better at it than anyone. Well, anyone other than that damned Ludendorff."
"Your alter ego,"
Parker mumbled. Strand's head snapped up. Parker almost shrank back in fear. Such a maneuver would have sullied him, however. He straightened, awaiting the worst.
"Go back to sleep,"
Strand said.
"I need to think about you a little longer. You're a strange combination for a new man. I wonder what happened to make you that way."
Parker would have liked to think about that last statement. Instead,
Without conscious thought, he climbed back onto the cot, laid his head on the pillow, closed his eyes, and fell asleep. Chapter 26 Maddox settled gingerly into the command chair on the bridge. The journey from the infirmary had tired him out. It was awful being so weak. He despised it. Seeing that Valerie and Keith watched their panels, the captain pulled out a rag and wiped sweat off his face. He shifted on the chair so the wound didn't rest against fabric. He had stopped taking pain inhibitors some time ago. It surprised him how well they had worked. Now his joints ached and he had a flu-like sensation. Thinking about it caused him to wipe his face again. He tucked away the rag. It wouldn't do for the others to see him so incapacitated.
"We're approaching the Jovian planet," Keith said.
Maddox studied the main screen. A huge gas giant with seething storms raging across its surface showed the nearness of the final Lahmer point. Some time ago, Meta had written a journal about her period with Kane, an agent for the new men who had kidnapped her from New York City. Kane had brought her here the first time, racing to Wolf Prime afterward.
"The gas giant is massive," Keith said while studying his board. "The tug on us is greater than I'd anticipated."
"We'll almost have to skin its surface to reach the Lahmer point," Valerie added.
Maddox would have nodded, but it felt as if that would have taken too much energy.
"Are you sure it's wise for you to be on the bridge, sir?"
Valerie asked. Maddox didn't bother answering such a question. He was better already. A few aches, some chills, it didn't mean anything. Valerie and Keith traded glances. Maddox noticed, but he refrained from commenting.
"I'm switching on the Lahmer drive,"
Keith said, tapping his board. What he meant was that the ship's special Lahmer senses began hunting for the often elusive wormhole entrance. According to Meta's notes, this Lahmer point was small. Was it too small for Victory to use? They would have to catalog its size before trying. The Xerxes system had a bad reputation, much like that of the Bermuda Triangle on Earth before the Space Age. Like in the Triangle, ships had disappeared under unusual circumstances. The worst story had occurred over 30 years ago. The Boron Company had set up a mining colony on a metal-heavy moon of the third planet. The colony had vanished, leaving no traces of the buildings or landing zones. Until Victory had passed through a year ago, no military or commercial routes had gone through the Xerxes system Lahmer points. Last voyage, Victory had fought silver drones in the strange system. The drones used the same fusion beams new men star cruisers employed. The conclusion had been obvious. The new men had stolen or acquired the builder weapons by plundering such a place with Strand's help. The drones could well have been the reason for the system's terrible reputation.
"There it is," Valerie said. "I've found the Lahmer point."
Maddox straightened. On the main screen, the wormhole opening appeared near the gas giant's stratosphere.
"This is going to be a tight fit, sir," Valerie said.
"Is the message beacon ready?"
Maddox asked.
"Aye, aye, sir,"
Keith said.
"Launch it."
Valerie cleared her throat.
"Is something the matter, Lieutenant?" Maddox asked.
"Shouldn't we wait to launch the packet, sir?"
she asked.
"We're still too far to activate the Lahmer point."
"Of course," Maddox said.
Once again, Valerie and Keith traded glances. Maddox wanted to pull the cloth back out and wipe the sweat off his forehead. Their actions had begun to irritate him. Valerie appeared as if she wanted to add something. Finally, she turned back to her panel. 10 minutes later, Keith spoke up.
"I'm in range, sir. Should I launch the packet?"
"Do it," Maddox said. Keith tapped his board. A few seconds later, a small missile left the starship.
"The gas giant is affecting its trajectory," Valerie said. I have it under control,"
Galleon said, who chose this moment to appear. The missile had begun to veer off course. Now it continued straight for the wormhole, zipping into it and disappearing from the main screen.
"The packet is on its way," Keith said. "Thanks for the tractor beam, Galleon."
"You are welcome,"
the hollow image said. Maddox swiveled his chair toward the bridge exit so the others couldn't see him. He pulled out his cloth again, wiping his face. As he completed the turn, he tucked the handkerchief away.
"How long should we wait, sir?" Keith asked.
2 hours will be good," Maddox said.
Valerie waited, finally saying, "Should we wait a little farther from the gas giant?"
"See that it's done," Maddox told Keith.
The message missile would enter the Xerxes system and broadcast to Port Admiral Hayes that victory was coming through. They didn't want to surprise the admiral and have him accidentally order the flotilla to open fire on the ancient vessel if the flotilla was near the wormhole exit. Time passed slowly for Maddox. He felt wretched. Why didn't his body heal faster as it usually did? He wasn't used to such prolonged weakness. Once again, he shifted his position on the chair, searching for a way to relax without his wound touching the backrest. A little later, his eyelids grew heavy. He fought it for a time. Then,
"Sir,"
Keith said loudly. Maddox's head snapped up as he opened his eyes. He was disoriented for just a moment. His mouth tasted awful, and the captain's lips firmed. He realized that he'd fallen asleep in the command chair. He felt foolish, like an old man. That bothered him more than he cared to admit. Both Val